rotten merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden, and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by WTIC and the Cromwell Savings Bank, a friendly bank in a friendly town. Now, here are your hosts, Ed Corcoran and Dick Bertel.
Good evening, and with me once again is radio historian collector Ed Corcoran.
Hi,
Ed, we're celebrating an anniversary of sorts tonight. This is the beginning of our sixth year together on the Golden Age of Radio.
I can't believe it, Dick. It just doesn't seem possible we could be on that long.
Pioneers ourselves here. Our guest tonight is Harry Herman, producer-director at the Radio TV Center at the University of Connecticut. Harry Herman has been associated with most of the top shows that we've listened to over the years, and we're going to be talking about them tonight. Harry, it's good to finally get you here on the Golden Age of Radio.
Well, I've been waiting a long time to come up there, Dick.
Harry, you started out as a writer. You were a producer, director at the end of the radio era, but how did you get started?
Well, I had the fortune, or misfortune, I suppose, of running into a fellow called Ed Poggenberg. He was a piano salesman, a paint salesman, and in the 20s he came up to Berlin Turnpike here near Hartford to open a miniature golf course, because they were big things in those days, and he thought he'd make a lot of money. And while there, he met a girl who was acting in a stock company here in Hartford. Her name was Shirley Booth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the two of them got married, and I caught up to Ed later, and he became a producer, director at J. Walter Thompson Company, and I came in as a writer there. And our first job together on radio was, believe it or not, Ripley's Show.
Oh, yes, I remember that program. Now, what capacity did he play?
He was a regular producer.
Mm-hmm.
He booked the guests. We used to do dramatizations for the first half, and Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard would go on with the band. And then we'd have a live, believe it or not, some crazy person,
yeah, it could have been on tape. We'd have been a lot better, I bet. You didn't know what they were going to say, did you?
Well, no, not exactly. But fellas that, you know, they cracked bricks over his head, and Billy Goat Mandy, and real odd, believe it or not, we get in. One was Santa Claus.
Really?
His name was Santa Claus, and we wanted him on for the Christmas show. So we waited around. The rehearsal was coming, and Santa Claus was coming in by plane or train or something. But we never got a hold of him. He started to crawl up all over the place. And finally some girl down at NBC said, "Well, there's been some nut calling up here, claims he's Santa Claus, and I keep turning him off."
Did you finally get him on the show?
He finally got on the show. The last 10 minutes he was there.
What about the Hindenburg? Did that become involved with Ripley's program?
Yeah, that was kind of a world breaker there, because the Hindenburg blew up. I can remember that tragedy. And an announcer was on who actually cried while the thing was going. The people were dropping out. It was a very dramatic thing.
Yeah, Herbert Morrison,
yeah. Well, in those days, you know, we weren't allowed to go on with anything recorded. We'd do a show at 8 o'clock for the East Coast, and 11 o'clock, everybody'd come back and have to do the whole thing over again. Well, this was just a wonderful piece of material, and we wanted to do it. We put all kinds of strings, and by gosh, it's the first time a recording went out over the network of this description of this disaster. It was on a Ripley show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a memorable event, certainly.
That was in that album that you were giving away during your anniversary. That whole excerpt was in there, you know.
I think that people remember that better than any other disaster mm-hmm. that has ever been broadcast.
Very, very moving.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you also were associated with one of my favorite shows, at least, the Lux Radio Theater. I really love that show. And you were a writer on that?
Yeah, well, believe it or not, it was written by Sandy Barnett, and he left for the coast to do the Lux program, so I got the Ripley, believe it or not, job to write. So Sandy would need help, and he'd send me things to write, adaptations of plays that they could put on out there. Well, one he sent me was called Cheating Cheaters, and the outstanding thing about this was it had a woman was a lead in it, and she did all the hocus pocus, and it was quite a thing to follow. It was a very interesting kind of a whodunit show. So I sent it out to Sandy. He says, it's going to be on in 3 weeks. So I turned in, and instead of a woman taking the lead, it's George Raft. I said, I guess it can't be the same show, but it was. He was Raft doing the whole thing.
Did you ever work with George Washington Hill?
He was one of the greatest advertising men I've ever met. He had his factory running down there, turning out Lucky Strike cigarettes, running at 98% capacity, and he devoted the rest of his time to the advertising. And as you know, he'd come up every 6 months with a new one, like Reach for Lucky instead of a Sweet, or well, Nature in the War is
going
a mile.
Going to War, remember that one?
Going to War, Green is going to War, and he was on it all the time. Matter of fact, he had a limousine about a block long with a chauffeur and so on, and in each window, pasted on the window, was a pack of Lucky Strikes. So he'd go down Park Avenue and see this beautiful limousine with Lucky Strike packs stuck to the window.
Did you work with him? Were you on the show at all?
Well, he wasn't on the show. He was sat at home and gave the orders. Well, we had to go down there after every hit parade and have a meeting the next morning with Mr. Hill. One morning he got us down there, and just before the hit parade went on, it was the NBC Symphony Orchestra with Toscanini. Mm-hmm. Benny Brower announcing the whole works. Very, very high hat. So Mr. Hill had to listen to this thing because his show was coming on later. Not that he had any, he was no music lover in that sense of the word. But this particular night, Toscanini did a thing by Paganini for a violin solo, but he had the whole violin section playing it. Well, this impressed Mr. Hill. Next morning we got a memo. And so I was listening to the symphony last night, and they were playing something by Paganini with all the violins. He says, the tune wasn't much, but did they have volume? Wow! Next week, the Lucky Strike Hit Parade will be 50 pieces. And from then on, there were 50 pieces in that orchestra.
Well, he certainly was a showman.
Who were some of the artists on that show at that time? There's a lot of... You remember? Was it Mark Warner at that time and Raymond Scott? And
Mark Warner, Raymond Scott. Of course, that was Harry Warner. That was his brother, you know.
Yes, that's right.
And we did a consolidated Edison show locally in New York that Raymond Scott would write original music for. Do you remember A Pack of Hungry Cannibals? Dinner music for A Pack of Hungry Cannibals.
Yes, I have the recording.
Dynamo and things like that. He'd come up with these beautiful, beautiful things, and Mark would play them, of course, and it was all on the consolidated show.
We have an original piece of your work. As a matter of fact, this comes from your collection called The Runaway. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Well, in the old days, the big variety shows such as The Valley Hour, Chasing Sandman, and so on, would have a dramatic sequence which gave stars a chance to perform on the programs over and above being ventriloquists like Edgar Bergen and some regulars. And something had to be put together for these people. And I'd write these original sketches or skits, whatever you want to call them, for the different people that were assigned. This particular one I happen to have a recording of. I might be a little scratchy, but it goes back to 1939 on the Chasing Sandman Hour. Don Ameche was the MC, and he and Jackie Cooper do this little sketch.
Most of them spend a few tremendously successful years in the spotlight and then seem to fade out of the picture. One of the most talented exceptions to this rule is our guest tonight, Jackie Cooper. It is certainly delightful watching the little Jackie, who did such great work in Skippy and The Champ, doing such a wonderful job in the recent picture, That Certain Age. Jackie has just completed Newsboys Home for Universal and is about to give us another demonstration of his growing talent in the spirit of Culver. Tonight, Jackie joins us to perform in an original dramatic story written by H.R. Herman, entitled The Runaway. Freight has stopped in the rain-drenched night to take on water at a small way station in the Pennsylvania mountains. From the dripping shadows under the water tower, a boy watches the fireman swing the big pipe over the tender and fill the tank. The tank floods over at last, and the fireman signals in the darkness. With a roar, the engine surges into life and the train starts forward. The boy slips from his hiding place, runs along with the freight cars, seizes the guardrail, and pulls himself up into the space between two cars. He hangs there for a moment, catching his breath, when from the darkness between the cars, a man calls to him.
Hello there, buddy.
Who is it?
Don't be scared. I ain't a detective. Climb in here with me between the cars. Safer, and the rain ain't so bad.
I can't see. It's too dark.
And here, I'll give you a hand.
Thanks.
Step over on the coupling. Look out, it's kind of slippery. Yeah, that's it. Now sit down next to me and brace your feet against the other car.
Okay.
You got to sit solid when this rattler starts to heave.
I don't know much about riding freights.
Well, me neither. But I learned plenty in the last 4 hours. Hey, you're only a kid.
I'm 16.
Oh, sorry. It's kind of dark here. How come you hopped this train?
I'm running away from home.
No. You didn't pick a good night for it, did you? What's the matter now? They treat you right?
Sure, they're swell, but...
Well, what's the matter?
Well, a man's got to get away and seek his fortune. Haynesville's a nice town, but it's too small. Can't do anything there.
Haynesville, hmm? Is that where you got on?
Yes, sir. I live there.
Where do you think you're going?
With Buffalo. I'm going to get a job on one of the lake steamers. Then when I know all about sailing, I'm going to New York and sign up on an ocean liner and travel all over the world. Well, you know, even ships from China dock in New York. I read about them in my geography book.
Yeah, I know. I just got off of one in New York yesterday.
Have you been to China?
Sure, kid. I've been all over China, India, France. Any place you can think of, I've been.
Gee. Well, where are you going now?
I'm going home, son.
You made your fortune?
Sure, I made my fortune. $56. I got paid off at the dock yesterday, and now I'm riding to Buffalo in my private car.
$56? Not so much.
Nah, it's nothing, kid, but it's all I got to pay the doctor.
You sick?
Me? Nah. It's my mother.
What's the matter with her?
I don't know. I didn't hear from her for 3 years until this morning when her letter caught up with me.
Did she say she was very sick?
Yeah. Maybe she won't be there when I get home.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. Forget about it, kid. One of the first things you got to learn when you're out on your own is not to get tangled up in other people's business. They got their troubles and you got yours. You got to pick your own star and follow it. Nobody's going to worry about you out in the world.
Well, I'll take care of myself.
You know, I was just about your age when I ran away.
Did you run away from home, too?
Yeah. I was just like you. I wanted to see what made the world go round.
You sorry you left?
Oh, I don't know. I guess every man's got to do something with his life. But I found out that no matter what he does, it's for some reason. He may not see the reason or understand it, but it's there.
I don't see what you mean.
Well, take you, for instance. I don't think you're very smart running away from a good home where they treat you all right and start on a bum. But you got a purpose in starting out in life like that. And you're going after it.
No, I think I understand.
Why, sure you do. There's a reason for everything. Even this rain that's soaking us to the skin, it ain't good for us. But it makes the crops grow. That's its purpose.
And you think there's a purpose for everything? Like, there may be a purpose for me meeting you in this train tonight.
That's right, kid.
I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to make me go back, but I'm not going no matter what you say.
Oh, now, look, don't get me wrong, kid. I ain't telling you to go back.
Well, then maybe we met so that you could tell me all about the ships I'm going on in China and things like that.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
My name's Billy. What's yours?
Mine is Buck Tommy.
Say, Buck, is it true there's a stone idol in India that can really talk?
Sure, I've seen it myself. He's got real emeralds in his eyes. There's a million diamonds all over his throat.
The train's slowing down.
Yeah, going through a freightyard.
Yeah, I know this place. It's Binghamton. That's the station over there. My father brought me through here on a trip once.
Yeah? Well, I hope we ain't gonna stop now. The railroad ditch might spot us.
Gee, I'm glad the rain stopped. I'm gonna get in and feel warmer.
Yeah, you'll be okay. It was only raining up in the mountains.
Hey, look, Buck, there's a man.
Where, kid?
See him running across the tracks? He's making for our train.
Keep low, kid. He's getting on. He may not see us in the dark.
Who's there?
Quiet, kid.
Talk up or I'll drill you.
He's got a gun.
Put it down.
Don't shoot. Well, who are you? Speak up.
Just a couple of bulls, pal.
Bums, yeah. Well, you're lucky at that. If it was railroad bulls, you'd be dead. Now, listen. If you want to keep out of trouble, keep your mouth shut, understand? You ain't seen me tonight. You ain't seen nothing, get me?
Okay, bud, we won't talk.
One guy got his tonight in this town for talking out of turn. A big mouth can get you in a lot of trouble.
We won't say anything, mister.
Okay, but I'm warning you. Just forget all about seeing me on this rattler.
Yes, sir. almost shot us.
Yeah, the guy has gone crazy.
He climbed up on top of the car. You think he's watching us?
Maybe. He's in a fix and he's ducking out of Binghamton.
What do you think he did?
I don't know, but the next time this strike slows down, we're going to hop off. The cops will be hot after that guy, and we don't want to get mixed up with him.
Okay, Buck, I'm with you. All right, Buck.
Jump off to this side over here. And run like the devil for those bushes over there.
I'll follow you.
Okay. All right, we're going slow enough now. Come on, let's go.
Wait, wait. Look over there.
What is it, kid?
A lot of men lying along the tracks. And they got rifles.
Cops.
They're on the other side of the train, too.
They're after that guy on top. They'll nab us with him. We can't get away.
What are we going to do, Buck?
They're closing in on us, kid.
I'm getting kind of scared, Buck.
Just sit tight, kid. Sit tight.
Look out, department! They may be hiding the rocks.
They're coming closer with those flashlights.
Quiet, don't talk.
Hey,
you won't get me, you dirty fool!
Firing! Stop firing! He's down! Here! Here's some more, Chief! Between the cars! Come on! Come on, get out of there! No funny business! Got you covered!
All right, we're coming. And I might say that you guys...
Tell it to the lieutenant!
Keep your chin up, kid. Keep it up. Keep your chin up, kid. Just remember, you ain't done nothing wrong, and I can't do nothing. And that's the whole story from the beginning to end. You gotta believe me, Lieutenant.
Your story's no good, Connors. There's too much evidence against you. We're holding you for murder.
Now listen, Lieutenant, you gotta believe me. I don't know anything about that shooting in Binghamton. I was on the freight all the way from New York. The kid told you that.
He's right, sir. Buck was on the train when I got out in Haynesville.
Is that what he told you to tell?
No, sir, he didn't. I'm not lying. Honest, I'm not.
The kid's right, Lieutenant. We wasn't in Binghamton.
Now, wait a minute. Two men held up a store in Binghamton and shot the proprietor. They made their getaway to the freight yards, and an hour later, we find you on a freight train. Your pal gets killed resisting arrest, and now you're trying to tell me you're not the other man.
I ain't, I tell you. That guy wasn't my pal. I never seen him before. He got on the freight with a gun in Binghamton. I don't know who the other guy is.
Come on, Connors. Why don't you come clean?
Oh, he didn't do it. He didn't
do it.
Quiet,
boy.
Honest, Lieutenant, you gotta believe me. I can prove it somehow.
You better think fast, because you're in a tight spot. You had $56 in your pocket, and you're riding the freight. It don't sound right.
That's my dough. I didn't hold anybody up for it.
He was saving that money for his mother. She's sick.
Oh, so that's the story, is it? Your poor, sick mother. What else did he tell you, son?
Well, lots of things.
What, for instance?
Oh, how he'd been on a ship that came from China and all about a talking idol in India and has real emeralds for eyes.
Yeah, is that so?
Oh, I was just telling that kid.
Quiet, you. What else did he talk about?
Well,
go on, tell me.
Well, he said that everything that happened in this world happened for some purpose. And even the rain that was falling, he said, well, even if it did make us wet and cold.
The rain. That's it, Lieutenant. That proves it. Here. Come here. Feel my clothes. They're still soaking wet. Same as the kids. Here. Come on. Feel them. It was raining up in the mountains, but it didn't rain in Binghamton. Everything was dry. That proves I was on the freight. Don't you see? That proves it.
Sergeant Williams.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Did you check the boy's story?
Yes, sir. I talked with his father on the phone. He left his home in Haynesville, Pennsylvania, right after supper. And his family's been out looking for him ever since. There was a cloudburst in the section, and they said he'd been hurt.
A cloudburst. Williams, you were in Binghamton this evening, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
Did it rain there?
No, sir. The stars were out.
Sure, everything was bone dry.
Well, Connors, I guess that clinches your alibi. You were in a bad spot, though. It's lucky for you the boy thought of the rain. The charge against you is changed from murder to vagrancy. And this township don't hold vagrants. You've got a half an hour to get out of town. Here's your money. Go on, get going.
Thanks, Lieutenant.
As for you, son, you're going home in the morning train. Your father will take care of you.
Yes, sir.
Say, Lieutenant, before I go, can I say goodbye to the kid?
Sure, all right, go ahead.
Look, kid, thanks for remembering.
You know about the purpose?
Yeah, the purpose. I guess this was it. You might have got me from London. Well, you picked tonight to run away.
Yeah, and I'm going back home now.
Yeah, me too.
It's good to be going home, isn't it, Buck?
Yeah, kid. Darn good.
Beautifully written. The Runaway. Don Ameche and Jackie Cooper going back to January 1st, 1939 from your own personal collection, Harry Herman.
It's pretty far back, and I'm, I guess it's one of the earliest ones I ever did.
We'll get back to our guest, Harry Herman, right after this message from our sponsor.
Get going. Get going.
Perhaps 1975 is the year you've decided to improve your home's exterior appearance. New plantings for the front yard, a new driveway, or that backyard patio or swimming pool you've always desired. Well, these two can be yours with a home improvement loan from the folks at Cromwell Savings Bank. Springtime is action time, so visit them soon. They're open Monday through Wednesday, 9 to 3, Thursday, 9 to 5, Fridays, 9 to 7:30, Saturdays, 9 to 12 noon.
You go more with us.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Cromwell Savings Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender, is located at Main and West Streets, Cromwell. Now back to Dick Brutell and Ed Corcoran.
Harry Herman is our guest tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio. He is now a producer-director at the Radio TV Center at the University of Connecticut, but formerly a writer, producer-director, and at one time, Harry, vice president of the Radio Writers Guild.
Yes, about a year and a half I had that, I have to say thankless job, because it was a pretty big job at the time. All the writers, with all their gripes and all the problems that they had, would come into the guild, and we had a terrible time not calling it a union, because writers don't want to belong to unions. But I did meet practically every writer that was extant in those days, and knew them pretty well personally. It was a great time.
Are any of these writers today working on the Hyman Brown show? Do you recall any of the names from that period?
Hyman did a lot of his own work there, and who he has now, I can't remember. That gets a little hazy.
And you also were associated with the Shell show, were you not, at one time?
Yes, the Joe Cook Shell show. There were many Shell shows, actually, but Joe Cook was the one that really worked hard on. Most interesting thing about that show was Joe Cook himself. He had a place out in New Jersey called Sleepless Hollow, and the things that went on there were unbelievable. There was a midget called Meadows who would meet you at the door and take your hat and coat and throw it out the window. Then you go down the bar, and there would be Meadows dressed as something else as the bartender. And then you go down the street, and there would be Meadows dressed as in a trolling outfit chateau that he had built on his golf course. His golf course, of course, was phenomenal. The last hole I remember was you climb up on an abandoned water tower. The tank was off there. And you'd take a putter and you'd putt the ball just to get it off the edge of the thing, because the green was right below the tower. Well, when you hit the green, it turned out to be cement, and the ball would go in 90 miles in every direction.
He was quite a guy.
Yeah. What was his style of comedy, Joe Cook, anyway?
It's almost indescribable, because he didn't tell jokes in the sense of the word, but he had situations running in which he was so inept that people began to laugh, not at him, but with him. You know, Joe Cook's famous on a stage. He had these inventions where somebody, you know, you'd drop a penny in the tank of water and the thing would go around, the wheel would come, and somebody would drop some cards, somebody would go to pick them up, and as they stooped down, they'd ring a bell, and a cow would run out, and finally, Joe Cook's partner, what was his name, I forgot, he had a restaurant on the coast. Anyway, he was the last guy in a big chair over a tank, and that would be the end of the thing. Joe would go all around the stage, let go, and he'd wind up in the water. Big splash.
Oh, that sounds great. Now, we were talking earlier about Ed Gardner and Shirley Booth and how they met right here in the Hartford area, got married and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a program called This Is New York with Beams Taylor, and you've indicated that that was the start of Archie. You know?
Yes. The idea then was that Rudy Valley show with Edgar Bergen and the Dummy on there preempted the 8 o'clock Sunday night hour. I mean, even the church was asking to move it because nobody came to church. And CBS was hanging out there with no time to sell, so he put in a lot of money, and we did a variety show called This Is New York with Dean Taylor's MC. Well, Gardner was producing, I was writing, and we finally decided we needed somebody to play off against Dean's, who was the silk hat, black tie, tailed fellow, who went around explaining what was going on in New York. We had big stars, Ethel Merman and so on this thing. So we decided we ought to find somebody who could be the buffer for Dean's. So we decided on a taxi driver. We called him Archie. And as we wrote this thing, Gardner decided I'm the only guy that can play it.
Mm-hmm.
So Doug Calder and Davison Taylor were helm at CBS. They called me up there and said, Gardner wants to do this thing. Do you think he can? I said, he's no actor. He can't do this kind of stuff. Well, Gardner, of course, got his way, and he didn't talk to me for 4 weeks after that. But in the meantime, we had to write these things, and then he became so engrossed in it. It was called Duffy's Bar and Grill in those days. And, of course, Shirley Booth was the first Miss Duffy. And this was a little thing that worked with Dean's Taylor all the way through. Finally, he got out of the taxi, and he got into the bar and grill, and then it developed from there on into what eventually became Duffy's Tavern, a show of its own.
You worked with Phillips H. Lord, didn't you?
Yeah, Phil and I were were buddies in those days. I started writing freelance for Phil on the Gangbusters show, which was farmed out to any writer he could find with the basic plot line in it, and then you'd have to do the dramatization. And I was doing pretty well. He'd send more and more to me because I had a knack then for that kind of dialogue, and I got to be a pretty good crime writer as a result. So then when Mr. District Attorney came along, why, I was number one writer on that, which at first was five times across the board.
How did that get started?
Well, Amos and Andy were being canceled out. Was, gee, I guess it was 7 o'clock, 7:30 around in there, five times a week. And Phil is a up-and-down salesman. He can go in and sell, you know, the electric fan of the Eskimo. And he went over there and sold to Mr. District Attorney, and based on what Tom Dewey was doing as the DA gangbuster over in, I guess he operated in Brooklyn. So we got down and we wrote the outline, and next thing you know, we had a show going over there five times a week, and that was something to do, I'll tell you. Then later, the Bob Hope Sunday night half hour needed a replacement for the summer. In those times, you know, the
big war,
the
war,
right? And you'd have to do something in the summertime. So we went on for Bob Hope. What is it, Salopatica for the Smile of Beauty? And no, Ipana for the Smile of Health. That was it. But the interesting thing about that, Ed Byron had come in as the director, producer, and I was writing it. And he said, we got to do something here because it was the first show we got to hit him. And I think this is the first instance of real violence on radio that we used for that show. We got a little tailor, and we got the gangsters came in. They were, you know, lining up the tailors. And they took this poor guy and beat him and beat him and beat him. He was screaming. And then Saul's orchestra picked up the rhythm of the beat, and it just seemed to explode all over the place with that music bridge. And it was the talk of radio the next day when we all got called on the carpet and said, what are you doing here, fellas? So we wanted to make a little splash. I guess we did. We sure did. We're going up and down.
Yeah, did you write that original opening monologue on that show?
Yeah,
that's one of the most famous in all of radio.
I wish I had a nickel for every time that had been broadcast. Yeah. It shall be the duty of the district attorney not only to prosecute to the limit of the law all people accused of crime within this county, but to defend with equal vigor the rights and privileges of all its citizens.
That's the one.
Do you have an excerpt from your collection, Ed?
Yeah, this is a little bit different. This is an audition show, Dick. We've never done this before, but this is how they used to sell them. They use pilots in television, they use auditions in radio. And this was the West Coast cast with David Bryan heading up and Ralph Moody and Sam Edwards in supporting roles. And the difference between this and New York is that the district attorney does have a name. He never was referred to by name in the original show, but here they just give him the name. So shall we listen?
Mr. District Attorney, starring David Bryan. Mr. District Attorney, champion of the people, defender of truth, guardian of our fundamental rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And it shall be my duty as district attorney not only to prosecute to the limit of the law all persons accused of crimes perpetrated within this county, but to defend with equal vigor the rights and privileges of all its citizens.
David Bryan as Paul Garrett, Mr. District Attorney.
As district attorney for this county, it's my job to prevent crimes as well as solve them. But sometimes you can't prevent them. Sometimes you can only pick up the trail after the violence has begun. In this case, it began 18 hours before the first police report reached my office.
All right, stop the car. Stop the car, I said.
Ellie, put that gun away.
Ellie! Shut up, Grandpa. Come on, pull up right here.
Ellie, don't be stupid. Take the gag out of his mouth. Give the man a chance. You can't...
Why? Would he give us a chance? Look at him. Look at his eyes bug out. He thought he knew all about us. Well, here's something he didn't know.
Ellis, you can't kill a man in cold blood.
No. Watch it. See, Grandpa? See how easy it is?
I knew you were a cheap little no-good punk, Ellis, but I didn't think that you were a murderer.
Come on, let's dump him out of here. Here, I got his wallet.
One thing I hate, Ellis, is a killer. I hate killers.
Now, look, Grandpa. You're in this up to your lower plate. Now, come on, give me a hand. Grab his ankles. Come on, will you? Okay. Swing his feet up. I'll dump him right here. These high weeds.
You think the law won't find him here?
Sure, they'll find him. But let them try to find us. Come on, shove. There. Pleasant dreams, Mr. Hicks. Okay, shove over, Grandpa. I'll drive back.
I hate killers, Ellie. I hate killers.
I hate killers, too. They're easy to hate when it's your job to study their handiwork and track them down. Harrington and I picked up the tracks on this case in the county morgue.
22 years service in this place still gives me the willies. You too, Chief?
Sure does. This one, Harrington?
Next one.
Now, let's take a look.
Yeah, 3 shots at close range. Like maybe he was looking right down the muzzle of the gun. Somebody else's gun.
Is he a John Doe?
Yeah, he was until an hour ago. His wife identified him. His name is Hicks. Alfred Hicks. He's an insurance investigator. He was.
And what company?
Globe, I think. Yeah, that's what Lieutenant Padway said. Globe Casualty Company. I asked Miss Miller to call them and find out what claims Hicks was working on.
Some good. Where was the body found?
In a vacant lot behind a motel way out on South Street. No identification on him at all. His wife called the cops when he didn't come home last night. Padway and homicide brought her down here for a look, and that's what she saw.
Harrington, go on over to homicide and find out what Lieutenant Padway's learned from Mrs. Hicks. I'll call the office and see if Miss Miller's learned anything from the insurance company.
Okay, Chief.
See you later. You mind if I use this phone? Thanks.
Office.
Hello, Miss Miller.
Oh, Mr. Garrett, we've been waiting to hear from you. I've just been talking to the chief investigator at Globe Casualty.
Well, what did you learn?
Well, he said Alfred Hicks had been assigned to a stolen car claim. A big stolen car claim, incidentally.
Oh? How big?
An auto carrier loaded with 4 new sedans was hijacked about 14 miles from the factory.
Do we have a report on that?
We do now. It's on your desk.
Fine.
Mr. Hicks had been checking the want ads for any slightly used cars that might be for sale. His last call had been at the Sleep Easy Motel on South Street.
Well, that was his last call, all right.
He was seeing a private party named Thompson.
Did you call the motel?
Yes, sir. There was a Mr. and a Mrs. Thompson. They checked out about 7 last night.
That figures. Look, if Harrington calls in before I get back to the office, send him over to the Sleep Easy Motel.
Yes, sir.
Tell him to get a description of the Thompsons and any leads on where they might be. I'll see you in about 20 minutes.
Well, that's Mr. District Attorney, all right, but with different voices. We'll get back to our guest, Harry Herman, right after this message from our sponsor.
With the ever-increasing cost of living, it's harder to save these days, yet it's more important than ever to make that extra sacrifice to save. Why? Because tomorrow's dreams will still be financed with today's savings. Cromwell Savings Bank suggests that whatever the amount, you save on a regular weekly basis. It's a good habit that you'll be thankful you acquired. Visit Cromwell Savings Bank and inquire about any one of their 6 convenient savings plans.
You grow more with us.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Cromwell Savings Bank, member FDIC, where you can now save Saturday mornings from 9 to 12 noon. Plenty of free parking available. Now back to Dick Bertel.
Our guest tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio is Harry Herman, now producer-director at the Radio TV Center at the University of Connecticut, one of the outstanding writers of the Golden Age of Radio. And, Ed, one of the shows that comes to mind, in addition to Gangbusters and Mr. District Attorney, is a favorite of mine, Mr. and Mrs. North. You remember that one, didn't you?
Yes, we had Barbara Britton on one time, Dick, and she was the co-star. And Richard Denning, who did it on television, is on Hawaii 5-0. He's the governor of the state, so...
Well, are you familiar with that series by any chance?
I wrote the very first Mr. and Mrs. North, because in those days I was supposed to be the crime writer, and I got the series off to a pretty good start. Alice Frost actually was Mrs. North on that series.
Yeah, that's right.
And I had to give it up because I went over to produce Ogden Nash and Guy Lombardo's show for a 3-ring tie for Ballantine, Ale and Beer. So that pulled me out of the freelance market.
What was the Broadway matinee show all about?
That was an unusual thing, absolutely unbelievable. This was a half-hour show every day of the week in the afternoon. Alfred Drake was the star of it, and Alfred at the time was doing Oklahoma. And it was a backbreaker. As a matter of fact, when I see Alfred now, he says, I don't know how we ever did it. But we got through with it. Jim Backus and... quite a host of people went through that thing because we needed people 5 times a week for a half-hour variety show. But what finally got us was that we had the same audience coming in every day.
Uh-huh.
These gals would go to shopping and they'd all make a date and they'd all come into the studio and sit there with their bags and listen to the show. And by the time a week or two went by, they wouldn't applaud anymore. They were so familiar with that.
They were poor.
Yeah, they were.
Well, that's unfortunate. Was Jim Backus on that show?
Yeah, Jim was very helpful. He has a great sense of humor, as you know, and did a lot of writing with it, and because we needed a lot of help, and especially in the warm-ups, too, to try to get this audience to break down and be a little human.
Sure.
This was all scripted. This wasn't ad-libbed on the show.
No, this was all timed out, music and everything else was going
tough.
On.
Like
yeah.
The Breakfast Club, they used to just go on cold turkey all the time, but this was a lot different.
Did you ever farm out any work? In other words, did you have writers working for you?
Well, there were lots of... Yes. This Broadway matinee, for instance, we had 3 or 4 people working on that. We had, on a big show like This Is New York, different spots would be done by writers and put together, especially since I couldn't write anymore after Ed Gardner got to be Archie. He gave up producing entirely. He got to be an actor then, and I had to do all the production. Boy, it was a job.
What about the RCA program, Music America Loves Best?
That was a favorite of mine. It was good music. It was a Sunday afternoon show, and we were selling RCA Red Seal labels. And strangely enough, Tommy Dorsey was the musical... I guess you could say consultant.
Mm-hmm.
He never played the trombone on it. And Alec Templeton would come in and do piano bits now and then. But the whole thing was on a very nice level, and I'd write the lead and the introductions to each number, and it was a, I'd say a quality show in the sense of the word, as against some of these other things we're talking about.
Did Templeton have his own material for the most part, or did you write for him too?
We write for him, but he got libid after we gave him the idea. Everything went into his head.
Yep.
Of course he couldn't read, he was blind, and but he had a good sense of humor, and an unbelievable pianist. He could do opera and take opera and make it rock.
Yeah.
As Eugene Lonergan is a real good jazz swinging piece. When Alec got through with it, oh, it's an opera.
Oh, yeah, he was great, and of course, I think the biggest show of all you worked on must have been the Kraft musical. Huh? That was really one of the real banner shows of that period, wasn't it?
Yeah, this was in kind of a hiatus time. It was coming out of New York, and Ed Herlihy and Joey Faye Jr. I can't think of his name. Joey Faye Jr. Possible. And Eddie Duchin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a variety show in the sense of the word, but it didn't seem to hold together. We didn't have the right combination. So the thing to do, of course, is go back to get the stars, and that happened to be Al Jolson. Well, Joey wanted to do the show in Hollywood, and my boss, who was enamored of a girl singer, wanted the show to come from New York. So they made a compromise. The show would go to Hollywood, provided the girl was included in the cast to do the singing. Well, Joey didn't give a darn who was going to sing there as long as he was up there. Now, to make the thing exactly right, my boss locked me in a hotel room in the Waldorf Astoria with another writer and said, "Now, you got to get the format for this show." Absolutely right. So we started, and Jolson sings April Showers to start, and the whole thing went through. The important thing was the girl spot, which she was going to say how it was going to be done, and the whole thing was blocked out. And Julie went off to the coast perfectly happy. She went with him. She didn't have the quality to stay with it, and I don't want to mention her name now, but it's too bad, but she couldn't, make the grade. However, the format went out there, and I guess maybe Mannheim took over on that particular operation, and Eddie Duchin, who has been on our show, turned out couldn't accompany Jolson, because Jolson would take it up a key, and Duchin couldn't take it up a key. So we finally got Oscar Levant back, and that was the show that finally came from the coast, the Jolson Kraft Music Hall.
You have a classic example of that one tonight.
Yes, that's right. We have the Kraft Music Hall starring Al Jolson and featuring Oscar Levant. So this is going to bring back some memories
good
for you.
This is the Kraft Music Hall starring Al Jolson with Oscar Levant, who brings his orchestra and chorus to our guest, Humphrey Bogart. So keep on looking for a bluebird and listening for its song. Whenever April showers come heard nothing yet. This is Al Jolson in the old Kraft Music Hall. I guess you all read in the papers the other day that Howard Hughes got his big flying boat up in the air. Of course, he had a little trouble getting it off the water. They found Senator Brewster underneath in a swimming suit trying to hold it down. But nobody better try and hold me down, because I'm going to take off for the Golden Gate. Come on, Lou Bring, let's have it. You are talking of a heaven when you talk of the West. As a sample of a heaven, California is best. I'm getting tired of the ice and snow. weary brain find password home. Train pulls out at 11 for that road mother's nest. Golden Gate, I'm coming to you. Golden Gate, sing hallelujah. I live in the sun, loving the moon where every month is you. A little sun is blonde, it's coming my way, just beyond the Lincoln Highway. Going strong now, won't be long now. Open up that golden gate. Mountains and mountains, rivers and fountains, rocks that are aged and worn. Acre after acre of the richest soil, 100 billion barrels of oil. Mountain and prairie, cattle and dairy, under a heaven of blue. And right at the tail, the end of the trail, thousands of boats sailing through. Golden Gate, I'm coming to you. Golden Gate, sing hallelujah. Going strong now, won't be long now. Open up that golden gate. I'm coming to you, golden gate. Oscar, yeah. You shouldn't look so depressed after I sing a song like that.
I can't help it, Al. I'm very downhearted.
Why?
I just found out I wasn't included in the list of the 10 best-dressed men.
But Oscar! Oscar, wait a minute. What reason could they have for leaving you off the list of the well-dressed men?
Because I'm a slob.
Yeah, I know, but besides that... Look.
Probably because I don't like the new men's fashion. They want us to wear trousers 2 inches shorter.
I wear mine that way. Of course. I got pretty ankles.
My tailor already made my trousers 2 inches shorter. I don't know how to overcome it.
Oh, that's easy, Oscar. Just get elevator shoes, and you'll push up farther up in your pants.
Honey, I didn't think of that.
I wish I hadn't.
I had an idea for elevator shoes for tall women who go with short men. There are built-in holes in the ground.
It's your turn. I know. Look. Oscar, don't mention women's fashion to me. If you're going around with that new look, you ain't going to get the old look from me, you know that.
What other kind of look can you give? I think all this stuff about fashions is ridiculous. They want a man to have 10 suits.
How many suits have you, Oscar, if I didn't know?
Well, I have one. But it's really not just a suit.
No?
When I take off the necktie, it becomes pajamas.
I wonder why pants have pussies in them. Look, Oscar, let's forget about fashion. You do need clothes. You know, playing the piano is wearing out the seat of your pants.
What are you talking about? Singing is wearing out the knees of your pants.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Oscar, the day is past when I sing on my knees.
What's the matter? Can't you get down there anymore?
I can get down there, all right. The trouble comes when I try to get back up.
This fashion thing can go too far. Next thing, you'll be shortening the keyboard on my piano. Tchaikovsky's Fifth will be down to a pint.
I'd like to make a request tonight. Would you do me a favor and play a little Gershwin music?
Al, I'm very happy to have you make such a request. And I'm doubly happy when it's Gershwin. This is his second prelude.
Oscar Levant and Al Jolson of the Kraft Music Hall. We'll get back to our guest, Harry Herman, right after this message from our sponsor.
Family expanding? Need more living space? If the answer to these questions is yes, then now, during the spring of the year, is the ideal time to visit Cromwell Savings Bank and discuss a home improvement loan. Perhaps you plan to furnish an uncompleted room, add another bathroom or a dormer, or get going on that long overdue addition to your present home. In any case, the folks at Cromwell Savings Bank will be most happy to discuss your home expansion plans with you and possibly help make your dreams become a reality. Stop in anytime at Cromwell Savings Bank, conveniently located at the corner of Main and West Streets in Cromwell. Or, if you prefer, call for an appointment. Cromwell Savings is open Monday through Wednesday from 9 to 3, Thursdays from 9 to 5, Fridays from 9 to 7:30, and now Saturdays from 9 to 12 noon. Let them show you how a Cromwell home improvement loan may take the cramp out of your family's lifestyle. Cromwell Savings Bank, a member of FDIC, is an equal housing lender. And now back to Dick Buttell and Ed Corcoran.
Well, Harry, I don't want you to get away from us tonight without a story about the Ballon Free Ring Time.
Ballantine.
What did I say?
Ballon.
Just want to
right.
Time.
Would you tell the story? Free Ring Time, yeah. That was a weird combination of Guy Lombardo and the Royal Canadians and Ogden Nash, the well-known and famous poet. I don't know who quite put this thing together, but I was assigned to produce the show and, of course, write on it. Ed Rice was with me at the time, and we both worked with Guy. And one of the themes on it was a contest at the end, trying to write a limerick as a la Ogden Nash, so that people would write in and get a $25 war bond, I guess it was in those days. So I happened to go through some old papers in preparation to talk to you people, and I found two original Nash limericks here in Ogden's own handwriting. I think these are going to be museum pieces eventually, but maybe you'd like to hear this one. "This license," the minister cried, "is good for one dog, not a bride. So to make the match legal, the bride barked like a beagle, and the groom found a flea on his hide."
That's great.
And here's another one. A weather predictor named Drew was looking for something to do. So one day in July, when friends asked him to try, he said, "Let it snow," and it snowed.
And on that note, we have to close out. But Harry Herman, thank you very much for being our guest tonight on the Golden Age of Radio. I enjoyed very much hearing these stories. Harry Herman, who is now producer-director at the Radio TV Center at the University of Connecticut. And until next time, this is Dick Buttell.
This is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
The Golden Age of Radio has been brought to you tonight by WTIC and the Cromwell Savings Bank, headquarters for personal loans, conveniently located on Main Street in Cromwell. Tonight's program was edited by Bob Girego and produced by Dick Buttell.
Pepper Young's Family. The story of your friends, the Youngs, is brought to you by Camay, the mild beauty soap for a smoother, softer complexion.
Rinse so white and rinse so bright.